If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th, hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It started in gymnastics when I was like 9 or 10. I was doing what's called giants, where you hang by one bar and your full body is hanging and your full body rotates around the bar. It's called
giants. Yeah, I used to do that. I used to do that all the time. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, okay.
You know, when you just swing your full body.
Yeah, when you just swing around, of course. Yeah, I was trying that this morning.
Yeah, I know. I am Jenna Elfman, and I am an actress, ever growing. Here we go.
Hello, hello, gentle listeners, and welcome back to my favorite podcast, Off the Beat. I am, as always, your host, Brian Baumgartner. Now, as you know from the introduction you just heard, the incredible Jenna Elfman is joining me on the podcast today. She has been in a lot of your favorite shows and movies: Fear the Walking Dead, Big Stone Gap, Friends with Benefits, but perhaps most famously, she starred as the spunky, free-spirited Dharma on the groundbreaking sitcom Dharma and Greg. Now, this is probably clear from Jenna's bright, shining Golden Globe that sits on her mantle, but she was truly amazing as Dharma. I'm a big fan, and I felt very, very lucky to get to speak with her right here before your very ears on this podcast. I loved talking to her, and I know after listening, you are going to love her too. Now, in addition to being a very talented actress, Jenna was also once a very talented ballet dancer. Now, I didn't realize this, but she was so good, she almost went professional before she pivoted into acting. But I'm going to leave it to Jenna to tell the whole story. So here she is, without further ado, my new bestie, Jenna Elfman.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Hello, Jenna. How are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. Well, it's good to see you. You're rare, actually. I was thinking about this because this seems antithetical, but you grew up and were raised in Los Angeles. I feel like this is rare in our business, actually. It seems like everyone I talk to is from Kansas or, I don't know, India
Detroit.
Or something. Detroit.
Canada. A lot of funny people from Canada, surprisingly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my husband, Bodie, we're both native Angelinos. It's amazing.
You work. Now, I mean, I'm skipping ahead a little. I heard that you met on a commercial. Is that right?
Yeah. The callback of a Sprite commercial in 1991.
Sprite breeds love. Sprite, that should be... You should be their new spokesperson, the two of you. Sprite breeds love.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because the slogan is, I like the way you make me laugh. And frankly, that is the thing with Bodie and I has been humor. That's been the thing that's kept us together 31 years. And there's the whole story, and I'll let you do your interview. But
no, come on. You met during a Sprite commercial. Wait, I don't know. What are you talking about? Tell me. No, tell
okay,
me.
Okay, so
what's the punchline of the commercial?
Here's the story of meeting.
Okay.
Briefly, so we were at the callback. You know, we go in there and it's always that awkward thing of like, tell a joke. And you're like, oh God. And I don't tell jokes. It's like not my thing.
Right.
So, but Bodie was being his most charming self because I was in the room and this was his moment to court me. And
right.
So he was, you know, tap dancing and being very, you know, with his humor and being very charming, he thought, and was telling a joke that my eyes couldn't have rolled back farther in my head. And I just felt awkward. And then he walked me to my car and said, you look just like my girlfriend. Do you have a headshot so I can show her? I was like, okay, weird. Okay. Yeah. But the weird thing is, I did look just like a girl he was dating, but she was like a year younger than me. But like literally, we looked like we were related.
Okay.
And then he was like teasing me the whole way, walking me to my car because I'd parked in, it was this audition place where like there's no parking ever. So I was parked in the carport of a random person's apartment. And so he was giving me hell about like, what if they come home? I was like, I don't know. It was going to be a fast audition. Anyway, we end up getting the job and we're on set. We keep getting rained out. So we're just spending day after day together, hanging out on set in the trailer, whatever, getting to know each other. And we film a bunch of vignettes together. And then we end up, you know, it takes a while before it starts airing. And it was a national commercial. And by this time we're like boyfriend, girlfriend now. It starts airing. He gets edited out. I'm in the commercial. He then has to progressively watch ever like $60,000 worth of residual that I'm getting. And the here's the punchline-ish is that the vignette that they used of me is a quick moment of me guffawing with laughter. And it was him right off camera making me laugh.
Yeah. I can't believe you stayed together. That for me, if I were him, I probably would have just been like, God damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
And here we are.
And you're still together 31 years.
31 years together.
Well, I mean, you're not really supposed to talk about age, but I know 31 years is a long time. You met young then.
Yeah, I was 19 and I'm 50 now. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is amazing. Okay, so before the Sprite commercial, you're in Los Angeles. I understand your folks are not in the business, right? Your dad is an aircraft executive, is that right?
Yeah, he wrote like security policy at Hughes Aircraft Company.
Oh, okay. When did you know that acting or the business? I don't know. I always hate that phrase, and I just used it. that was something you were interested in. Was it high school? Younger?
Younger. I had told my mom, I had a career in ballet, like before I became an actress, because, you know, your mom puts you in ballet class and that's what right. you do. And so I just did that while I was in school. But apparently when I was like 3 or 4, I told my mom, I'm going to be very famous on TV one day. You know, and it was like, I was a TV kid. I enjoyed watching things on TV, playing in my playpen. My brother was 10 years older and my sister was 13 years older. My mom had had some miscarriages between my brother and I. So there was this like 10-year age gap.
Right.
So I would be like sitting there and watching them outside, watching them come home with their friends. And, you know, I was watching like Get Smart and Bewitched and Brady Bunch and all these things while my mom was tending to them. And I don't know, I thought it was very interesting what right. people could make me laugh or could captivate my attention or make me feel different emotions, you know? Right. And I thought that's interesting, because from a very early age, I was really troubled by seeing that people had suffering in them. As a young toddler and child and just being around in life, my mom would apologize for me staring at people, but I was a people watcher. I was very interested in humanity and human behavior and curious about people, but I would right. observe so much suffering. And I was like, it captivated my attention. And I was like, how as a little child can I make someone feel better? And if they were suffering, that means it went bad, which means it was good before, you know, right. there was a lot, they lost something and became sad. And how do you get them back to before they became sad? And that was something that like really took a lot of my attention as a child, was this like empathetic concern. And I think that I also remember, I think Jungle Book was the first movie I ever saw in a movie theater. And it moved me to tears at this one point. And I felt that sense of empathy and emotion. And I thought it was so weird how a two-dimensional screen could make arouse emotion, human emotion in me.
Right.
And I thought, oh, maybe that's a way you're in people's homes when you're on TV. Maybe that's a way I can make people feel better.
Right. That is so interesting. And also so incredibly mature. I mean, the idea, because I was about to say, I was the same way, like studying human behaviors, but I don't think I had at all what you're talking about, which is actually a journey, like that you were mature enough to say, oh, they're in a bad place right now. Then for you to start to identify that so early, that's amazing.
Yeah. I just remember it occupying a lot of my attention. I don't know. I guess that's how I entertained myself or something. It was just, that was my hook. You know, there's some kids that like to, you know, they play with trinkets and they like to undo things and try and figure out how to put them back together. Or certain kids are, you know, they just have these inclinations in areas, and
right.
human beings were kind of my fascination, you know?
Right. So you went to LA County High School for the arts. Now was that for dance?
Yeah, that was for dance.
For dance. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I would go there, and then after school, we'd get out at 4 o'clock, and then me and my friend went to the same ballet school in Santa Monica, West Side Ballet. And so we'd take it was in Alhambra, LA County High School for the Arts, which is east of downtown LA. So then it was like peak traffic time. You can imagine the 10 freeway at 4 p.m., 4:15, 4:30, going from Alhambra to Santa Monica 5 days a week. But that's how dedicated we were at, you know, becoming professional ballerinas. And so that's just what you do.
Right. You had an injury. Is that right?
Yeah. It was, it started in gymnastics when I was like 9 or 10. I was doing what's called giants, where you hang by one bar and your full body is hanging and your full body rotates around the bar. It's called
giants. Yeah, I used to do that. I used to do that all the time. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
You know, when you just swing your full body.
Yeah. When you just swing around, of course. Yeah. I was trying that this morning.
Yeah, I know. But I had dismounted crooked, landed on the edge of the mat and tore 4 ligaments when I was really young. So that kind of set the stage for like just a vulnerable right ankle. And then I'm going through doing ballet, and I go do summer programs on full scholarship to Pacific Northwest Ballet in Seattle, Washington, which was really fun. But that was a very intensive program. And my ankle would just, from the stress and everything, it would just activate. And then I had a tendon separate from the bone. Then I had to be in a cast. And it was just like these recurring things. And I, at a certain year in my later teens, it was time to either go into a ballet company, which I was considering doing, going into Pacific Northwest Ballet, because I always got full scholarship there. And I thought this is the right transitional point. But then it was like this ankle injury was so recurring. I went, I'm going to spend more time icing and tending to an injury than I am creating. And that's not a right career. And it was mainly being on my toes and doing point work that was the triggering factor. So I went, well, let me dance in TV and film, because it's more jazz or lyrical. So that's when I started making that transition and got a dance agent and started going on auditions for things that had dancers in them. And that started kind of that transition from dance to on camera, like acting and all of that.
Right. Did you ever consider acting as a child?
I don't know if I had articulated it as acting, but I knew I loved make-believe. I knew I was obsessed with human behavior and human beings. And I knew I wanted to reach far and wide in terms of whatever it was I was going to create. I wanted it to be like hundreds of millions of people. Like I wanted to reach a lot of people. But I don't know if it was acting per se, more than just affecting, like, and leaving them with an effect created upon them, you know, that I could move them to think a new thought or move their emotions somehow. And in doing so, remind them that they're alive and that there's hope. You know, that was sort of like my thought process, I think.
Right. Well, I read online, at least your first credited job is as a dancer in a Depeche Mode music video. Mm-hmm. When did you start studying acting? When did at least that seed start?
When I met my husband. I was dancing on the Academy. I was one of the dancers on the Academy Awards in 1991. Yes. And that was the same month that I met Bodhi on the Sprite commercial. It was after I had done the Academy Awards. I was like this big and an inch tall on the screen and one of 30. And I went, this is the best job I can get in LA as a dancer. I didn't have plans to go to Broadway because I didn't really sing. And I went, I don't feel like I can make that impact. That was what my sort of, you know, I hadn't articulated it, but I just knew that impression of a goal. I didn't feel like I could do that being an inch big and one of 30 and not having like my own name identity. So I went, I think it's time to start acting. Okay. And so that was that transition. And I had met Bodhi that month and I was like, I need to study acting. And so he's like, well, I study here. I was like, okay, I'll go there. I had done some improv classes. My mom put me in like improv comedy classes when I was a teenager for commercials, just so that I had some tools for like commercial auditions. So I had done some of that already, but I hadn't done scene study or character work.
So you were going to be a professional dancer.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Like I didn't hang out at malls and do all the teenage stuff. I was in a dance studio mastering a fine art, you know, like I really was dedicated to that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's such a tremendous, as you say, a tremendous amount of time and number of hours training. So you're doing commercials and you're on TV, but you're dancing and then you start taking classes. And when does it sort of click for you that this is something that I can do? Was it right away or?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Actually, this is when it started. Good asking me this question, Brian. Thank you. This just reminded me. I just remembered this when you asked that. Earlier on when I was a teenager, my mom had me do one acting private with an acting coach. That was scene study. It was like a little mini thing. It was just he and I like in a dance studio just to rent the space or whatever.
Right.
And I remember that moment of being in total belief of who I was as that character, like being another person with all the thoughts and emotions in that environment with that story that's going on as a human being in that. And I remember getting so much sensation out of that And I felt so alive in that, all by myself in this space. And I was like, this is amazing. This is stimulating and fulfilling. And I was like, wow. And I think that is probably when I went, oh, it's kind of magical.
Right.
It was like you were truly in this other existence knowingly. And I just thought, wow, this is special. This isn't something everybody does. This is like really cool. So that suspended moment of when, you know, and for me today, when the camera's rolling and the director says action, like that is the safest place ever for me, because everyone agrees in that moment that that's the story. And the cameraman, the focus puller, the sound technician, the prop man, everybody is in agreement that this is the story from each of their jobs. And I just think that that is, I think we take for granted, we don't really think about it, but when you really think about that, that's pretty cool.
That, I will never forget that, Jenna. No, I'm serious. I will never forget that, because you're right. In life, look, everybody plays a character to one degree or another, right? With your friends, with your spouse, with your kids, with your businesses, so whatever. Like everyone's constantly playing a version of themselves that works in this situation. At the same time, if you're with a group of people, everybody else has their own agendas and are playing their own specific roles, and at the same time trying to figure out what's really going on beneath the surface. And all of those things are happening all of the time. But what you're saying is so true. In the moment of acting in a scene, everyone's objectives are set, and everyone who's around are helping to support this one moment that everyone agrees on. I just literally re-said what you said, but this is going to stick with me forever. So
yes,
thank you for that.
It's something you just never think about till you think about it, and then you realize how magical and special it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, so I'm not trying to make this about me. People give me shit all the time, right? Because when I moved to Los Angeles, I met the folks on The Office like 3 months later, right? And so people are like, oh, come on, how are you? You know, but I'm like, no, guys, listen, I had this whole career that happened before this, but you, I mean, this is amazing. I did not know that, like, you were so focused on being a dancer and this transition happened for you really quickly. I mean, it sounds like you had this experience that was sort of transformative early on, but you meet your husband and you start taking classes and you immediately respond to the work, it sounds like. And then not much later, you find yourself as a series regular on your first show, Townies. What was that experience like for you, your first show after, you know, doing commercials and guest star stuff?
Yeah, it was a lot of work to get an agent, like not a commercial, but a theatrical agent. So I had to navigate and all the things I did to make that happen. So I finally got an agent in the summer of 1995 and then immediately started getting guest star roles. So I was just getting my feet wet and, you know, doing a series of guest star roles, both comedy and drama. And then pilot season in the January, February of 1996. And so I went on, started going on those auditions, immediately went to network on one of them, didn't get it. And then going to network on Townies came up. I was the first actress cast in that. And it just felt right. You know, I felt like I've been working so hard. I was like very happy it happened so fast. But in my own experience, it didn't feel like it happened fast because I've just been putting in 4 years of study and working my ass off and dreaming about trying to get an agent, trying to make this happen. So everything felt appropriate. You know, I never felt undeserving of it, or I never felt doubtful of myself because I had legitimately busted my ass to put in the work and worked really hard to get it. So I was enjoying having achieved it and learning that next chance, you know, like now you have the job. Well, now this is a whole new learning curve. And Pam Fryman, she directed every episode of Townies and she taught me everything about for camera and everything I needed to learn. And I certainly did not know, you know, down to even like what weight to put on which foot so you're not blocking the light of your fellows for that camera, you know. And, you know, those first press interviews and all of the whole package of things that comes with that, that's brand new and thrilling. And then learning about the politics of co-stars, you know, and how to be in that group. It's not just your journey. And for me, I was a little on my journey. And then I had to learn throughout these next jobs about everyone's collective process and you grow up a bit. So that was interesting and cool. And then the last day of filming, then it was like, at 13 million viewers, it wasn't enough and we were getting canceled.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, those were the days.
Oh my gosh.
But I had gotten noticed from my work on the show. It was sort of like, who's this new funny girl? And frankly, I didn't know I had any ability at comedy that was special or unique or anything. I just studied as an actor. So I was just doing the character,
right,
in my point of view. And 20th Century Fox called me for a general interview. So I went to that meeting and then drove to work at Radford to film the last day of Townies. And after the meeting, by the time I pulled up at Radford, they had called and offered me a $1 million development deal.
Wow.
So that was nice.
That was nice. And also, I would say that, yes, you made an impression on Townies. I mean, that's incredible. Okay, keep going. So you know you have that. You know this show is ending, yet you know that you have this.
Yeah. And then it was a bit of a journey of like, ABC wanted to meet me. It was Jamie Tarsus at that time. And so I went and had a general with Jamie and she's like, we want you. And so then it was the lovely problem of to do a studio deal or a network deal. And what should I do? And, you know, like I remember my husband and I sitting in the car. We were like trying to figure out like, what are the pros and cons of a network deal versus a studio deal? And then we went, well, with a studio deal, you could go to any network, but on a network, that's it, you know? And so we just thought maybe there was more creative and artistic access and flexibility with a studio deal. So that's the one I decided upon. And then they started sending me, 20th sent me a list of writers that they had deals with and said, pick whoever you want to write a show for you. I was like, okay, I've never done this before. I'll just start at the top of the list, literally. And it was Jeff and Jeff. And I went and had a meeting with them and they were like, we think you're great, but we're already developing something for this season. So you have to wait till next season. And I had the instinct that I have momentum and I didn't want to wait. So right. I just kind of went to the next one on the list. And at that, right in that period of that week, Chuck Lorre had sent over and Dottie Dartland had sent over kind of a sketch of this character. The bottom line for her was she was who she was, not this layered neurotic thing, but like if she's happy, you scratch the surface, you don't get a different beast. You just get more of her. And that was the concept for this character. And then they ended up working backwards. Well, how do you get somebody like that? Well, maybe hippie parents who just allow her to be, you know? And,
right.
And at that time, it was very unique for that kind of character, because it was a lot more at the time, women in comedy on shows, it was more neurotic. And so anyhow, I went and had a general meeting with Dottie Dartland and Chuck Lorre, where they pitched me Dharma and Greg. It was like, they pitched it and I saw the entire thing. I saw all the success. I literally, it was so right. And I was just so connected to where I was at, you know, that I was like, I didn't go home and ask my agents, what do you think? I didn't ask my husband. I literally said, yes, let's do it. And we shook on it right there at Jerry's Deli on Ventura Boulevard.
Wow.
And that felt really good to just own me knowing this is the right thing. I just could see myself in it. I don't know. It was just beautiful. It was just those moments that happen that you're like, you cherish forever, you know?
Yes. For those of you, Dharma and Greg, 5 seasons, 97 to 2002. Jenna wins a Golden Globe for her role as Dharma. 3 Primetime Emmy nominations for Best Actress. You know, what you said is what I was thinking about this morning, that there wasn't female characters like this at the time. I mean, it really, I don't know. Did you ever talk about Lucille Ball? I mean, to me, the boldness, the physical comedy, that's really where almost not since then was there sort of a central female character that was able to do so much. Did you ever talk about I Love Lucy or were there shows that you found Dharma and Greg sprouting out of?
I didn't directly talk about I Love Lucy that I remember, but for me, I grew up obsessed with I Love Lucy and have seen every episode, own every single one through wherever I had to get them. And my mom loved Lucille Ball and I love Lucille Ball. I loved it. I could watch it 24/7. It was just totally hit my jam as a kid. And, you know, I enjoyed, like I said, Get Smart and MASH and all of these other shows. You know, Judy Holliday and Born Yesterday is also like uber favorite of mine, because if you really watch her in that, I mean, she's brilliant. And I don't know. It's like one of those things where it was just an affinity, you know, it just got my goose, you know, it was just my jam. And so it was inspiring to me and probably was, and the Carol Burnett show, I love Carol Burnett, but you know, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman were my jam. Like I was right. A little girl obsessed with them,
right.
With these two men, middle-aged men that I was like, I couldn't get, it was like chocolate fudge. Like I couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And so I think that just, when you watch as much of it as I did, it educates you. You know, I was educated in physical comedy by literally watching every single thing of those. So I think that was just in my cellular, spiritual cellular makeup of an education, you know, and maybe they wrote towards my physical comedy from seeing Townies, you know, I don't know how it all came to be on that, how everything pieced together so well for me in terms right. of them writing, but it was created for me. So maybe they just saw what I had and wrote towards that, you know?
Right. Because you were in on it so early, did you screen test with the men? I'm talking, of course, about Thomas Gibson, who played Greg. Did you have something to do with the casting? Did you read with him beforehand? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes they sense. Had me, I mean, the show was my show and they created it for me. So they had me in when they, you know, not every casting, but on the callbacks, they had it narrowed it down to a batch. And also with Thomas, he came in and there was other guys who were great. You know, they were great, but he came in and it was like the show was happening. I mean, you might as well just turn the camera on. It was right. all happening. And it's dynamics and chemistry that you can't put on a page.
That's right.
It's just that dichotomy of his character and how he was raised and my character and how she was raised. You know, he's a lawyer and is like a no until it's a yes. And she was a free spirit. It was a yes until it was a no. And so those, that dichotomy, it was just worked, you know, yes. It was just work. It worked at that time, at that moment, it was perfect. And I remember he read and left and I looked at Chuck and Chuck stood up and just made like a home run swing grand slam gesture. And we were like, that was it. That was it. It was it. It was amazing.
Yeah. It's interesting. We talked a lot about this and my experience on The Office. And one thing that Greg Daniels, our showrunner at the time, said is you can't write behavior, right? You have to observe, as you talked about earlier, it's about this very small nuances that every individual responds to things in totally different and unique ways. As an actor, you put those in a bag and hope you can replicate them effectively, but yeah. You can't write it. It just happens there in the moment.
Yeah. And it's not even anything I thought about either. It wasn't like I was thinking of behaviors. I just knew the DNA, the home base. You know, for me, it's often finding what's the home base for a character in terms of what's their main, what are they in at any given time? But what's the main thing that they're in? What's their home base? And for her, it was yes.
Right.
And so I just leaned into, you know, it was just yes. And every character is different. With EdTV, my character's, she's so insecure. Her space doesn't extend more than like an inch and a half from the front of her face. Like she's not extroverted, you know, like she can't. So that then anything that came at me was just like, oh my God, because she was suddenly, her life was like a reality show, literally. And she's a UPS driver and is just trying to start this relationship with him. Like, and everyone in America is giving their opinion. It was, you know, so that's where she was at. And that determines, once I locate like the home base, then it brings about these behaviors that you don't have to sit there writing on the page. It just comes because you know that comes from that home base. So anyhow.
I love that. I don't call it a home base, but yeah, for me, it's the same thing. Yeah, there's a physical characteristic. There's something physically about how that character that you're creating moves in the world or exists
Yeah, that tempo. Like Kevin has an identifiable like meter. You know what
yes,
I mean?
That's
and the
right.
way you held your body, you just could set the meter at that tempo. You're in my house. Like I've watched so much. I mean, we're like on a kick for the last year and a half. Like we were watching right. every episode of The Office. And Randy Cordray, by the way, was the line producer on both, I think, Townies and definitely Dharma and Greg.
Oh,
and
that's amazing. I love Randy.
He's amazing. We share him in common, but yeah, I love watching you guys. And it's so fun when you see wonderful actors that are relishing the character they're creating. And it just is that right fit at the right time for them.
Right.
It's so inspiring, you know, to watch where you are in your mind and kinetic, how it manifests kinetically. And it's just so delightful to see that. And especially, you know, knowing what your rhythm and personality is as you, and you
right.
see the difference, you know, right. it's so fun to see how you transformed yourself.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. But yes, that idea that you talked about some, you know, the space only exists 2 inches in front. And if anybody comes at it's that. Yeah. And I've talked yeah. about this before, but for me, one of the things about Kevin was he was not aware of his size in the space. And that he could not rotate on his hips. So there was no turning left or right.
Amazing.
His entire body had to move in that direction in order to look that way, which takes time, which is about the rhythm that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What made you come up with that? Was it reading the dialogue that then put you in that part of your body that way? And then that's what came of it? Or was it someone you saw that you're like, oh, this is that guy? And then like, where did that come from for you?
Well, it's a little bit tricky. I mean, I don't know. You know, I did so much theater that for me, always the physicality was a part of it. So I guess based on the words and how it was written and then translating that for myself in terms of, yeah, everything physically. So it always.
That's just kind of where it landed in you.
Yeah.
Right? That impression of that guy just kind of landed in your body that way.
Yeah, exactly. Why did the show end? Or was this a collective decision or was this a network decision? And how much time did you know at the end?
It was such a anticlimactic way to end for something that had been so awesome. We, you know, it was like any other year. You finish the season in May and April, and you yeah. wait to find out if you got picked up till May. And then it was like, nope, you didn't. And that was it. I mean, it wasn't like, hey, this might be the last season. It was like, it was a season like any other, to my knowledge anyway. If there had been talk of it maybe being the last, I hadn't been informed. So
right.
I wasn't filming that last season, making sure I'm soaking it all in the way, you know what I mean? Like, and with all the ceremony that you would do if you know it's the last season of something you had all been living with for 5 years. So it was so weird
Ugh.
To then just not be coming back to work after all of that. And it was a mystery, frankly, for a long time for me. And I ultimately, that one of the executives had then created his own production company or whatever. And then I had worked on a show that was with that production company. And I later called him. I was like, you know what? Can you answer something for me? And he was like, you know, like the licensing, 20th couldn't ultimately make a licensing deal with ABC in a way that wouldn't cause it to lose money if it went past 5 years. I was like,
wow,
really? Like that was it? That's it?
That's it.
Like that, huh? Wow.
Ugh.
That's a buzzkill. That's interesting. So
yeah.
Thank you for telling me, but ugh, you know.
I know. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it was kind of, but whatever. It was such a great time while it lasted.
Right.
And I pushed and pushed and pushed and had been working very hard to make the episodes available on DVD or, you know, whatever. And was very insistent on that because I didn't want it to just now be not available. And there was some music licensing rights where the third season and on couldn't be made into a DVD. So I got the first 2 years released on DVD by pushing 20th very hard repeatedly
right.
for years. And then when streaming came about, I was like, can we relook at this? I asked my lawyer, can you call them? Let's relook at this, because now that might be different rules because it's considered TV. And then it got packaged in a thing and Hulu bought it. So now all five seasons are available on Hulu, which just thrills me because that was so much hard work. And it was such a beautiful time. And, you know, the response from fans is so awesome.
Yeah.
They just like become joyful when they see, oh, I love Dharma. You know, it's just the effect Dharma created. It like, and how much laughter, and they found themselves or some, like with The Office, you know, they find them or some part of their family in one of those characters, and it makes them laugh and gives them relief from life.
Yeah. Your character specifically, I think socially, in terms of, you know, what the show did, had a very feminist perspective, and I feel like showed, unlike many shows on television, a really strong, independent, funny woman taking the lead. Are you proud of that, or do you see that as the show's legacy in a way?
You know, I see it. Yeah, I see it that in the most fun, charismatic way, you can own your space and you don't have to be an asshole. And you don't, unless you want to, you know, or you can, I mean, a woman, frankly, can be whatever she wants. But I loved that it was, she led with love, but she was who she was, and that there can be a lightheartedness to owning your space. There can be a playful quality, not where you have to diminish your power by being kooky or playful. You know, you can be serious and however you want to do it, but just that it can be loving and present and whole. And I loved that about her. And I had a lot of people write letters that were like going to commit suicide, and they decided not to because Dharma showed them that it's okay to be themselves, even if it's quirky or offbeat or not the usual. It's okay and it's worth sticking around. And I got so many of those letters. It was like, wow, you know? And so I think there was this multidimensional effect of having fun and being her fully, and my enjoyment within that was probably a bit contagious too, and improved the mood enough that maybe they could think a little more clearly, however that went down. But I do think it was an unobvious feminist example, you know?
Right. Awesome. And truly, you know, I was alive at the time and watching television. I mean, I can't overstate what a significant impact it had on television at the time it was on. And I think also today, and roles, be it Mindy Kaling in The Mindy Project or Ellie Kemper in Kimmy Schmidt. I mean, allowing women who are potentially quirky, but strong, with strong personalities to lead shows, I think it has a huge effect on television today.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Also, by the way, tons of films, a bunch of comedies, to name a few: Six Wives of Henry LaFay, Love Hurts, Friends with Benefits, Big Stone Gap. Is there any film that happened, say, after Dharma and Greg that you feel like was able to transition and pivot you in a new direction, be seen in a different way?
I think Keeping the Faith was one for me, because for me, it was definitely transitional, because I filmed it right, I don't know, in the hiatus before one of the last seasons of Dharma and Greg. And I had to be a woman in this film. And I, frankly, had only been a girl before. And in Dharma and Greg, that was a girl, you know? I was so in that kinetic cuteness of Dharma that it's like, you're kind of scared to not do it. Because it's really working for you, especially when just what feels like just yesterday you were scrounging for top ramen, right. you know, you're a little nervous to not do the thing that's like, you know, being lauded and stuff. So, but that was with Edward Norton and Ben Stiller, and it was Edward Norton's directorial debut, and we filmed it in New York, and it was, you know, these three childhood friends, and I was, one ended up becoming obviously Edward Norton, the priest, Ben Stiller, the rabbi. And I was the shiksa they grew up with, who became a very strong businesswoman. And they kind of reunite. She comes back to New York for business and they all reunite. And then a sort of love triangle ensues. And Edward, it was so cool because I really admire him as an actor. You know, he helped me develop that character. And so to work with someone I really admired as an actor, it was like, growing my eyebrows in and lowering my voice, slowing the kinetic factor down,
yeah,
slowing my everything down, speaking slower. I felt like I wanted to die. I was so uncomfortable. I remember that first day, I was scared to death. And we were, I mean, sweating and uncomfortable because I was so far out of my comfort zone of what was tried and true and that I had been working on. And I mean, I also, this is so weird, I ultimately, somewhere in there, I had hyperthyroid and had gotten diagnosed maybe just before that or whatever, but I had had a hyperactive thyroid, which actually probably kind of contributed to that kinetic aspect of myself, that it was hard to sit still or whatever, but it worked. So, okay. But but anyway, it was, for various reasons, very hard to just slow down my speech, sit quietly, change my whole thing to be this girl. And I didn't feel connected to all the things I felt burning to make the scene funny or to do these things. And it was so different for me. And it was, it made me go from girl to woman using my craft. And it was a really huge learning experience for me. And I could prove to myself by doing that job that I can be a woman. I can find power in stillness. It's okay to feel that power that comes up when you are still, because frankly, if you're always kinetic, it is a dispersal. You could dilute your power.
Yes.
And so I think that was also part of the awkwardness and uncomfortable, was like, being still is powerful. And I was kind of scared of that until I got used to it.
Yes. That's so interesting. So now I would call it a very big departure from at least what you're known for. Obviously you have done dramas, but it doesn't get any more dramatic than Fear the Walking Dead. Were you a fan of The Walking Dead before Fear the Walking Dead? Were you aware of this show? Were you a fan?
I was aware, because I don't know how you could not be aware of it, right, of the whole Walking Dead universe. I was certainly aware in terms of my personal kind of where I would go to for entertainment. Zombies wasn't the genre. Horror wasn't my genre, in terms of like, that's just not where I leaned. You know, I would, you know, I'm sort of late to certain things, but, and that transition from where I was in my mental artistic journey to that arriving and landing in my lap was like, couldn't have come at a better time. And it would like kind of saved my joy, my artistic joy. Like I was really in a kind of a rut and kind of bummed out at like how things had progressed on shows that I had done and was had worked so hard to make things work. And I wanted to start expressing myself artistically in a new way. I had to reinvent myself because I wanted to do something new. I needed a new challenge. And it landed like 10 days after making some adjustments in the structure of like, you know, my representation or whatever, and sorting some things out, they called and offered me the job. And then at that point, I promptly watched every episode of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. That was a lot of viewing. but I felt like this is a huge entertainment universe. The fandom is a character in this piece.
Yes.
And all the mythology is its own thing. And I was like, I need to like fully go in all the way and educate myself on this. And in doing so, I became a fan myself. And I really love the storytelling, you know? So it's been really 360, lots of good sensation for me.
Yeah. Your experience now, having been on the show a long time, do you feel that the environment around work is different than a comedy or not?
For me, it is. It's a totally different experience. And I don't know if that's just drama comedy or like this Walking Dead universe, because there's drama, but there's a mythology to it.
Okay.
So in terms of how character stories connect and bounce off each other, they're very circular, especially because we had crossover characters from Walking Dead to Fear. So when I joined the show, it had gone through like a revamp of sorts in season 4. And they had really brought it even more under that umbrella and started connecting story and character more rather than two different shows.
Right.
So I had a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And so I find my whole process with the script and everything, I felt like I was starting over. I literally felt like, oh my God, wait a second, in terms of how much I have to understand story-wise.
Yes.
So yeah, it's been challenging in the greatest, most stimulating way. Yeah, I love it. I love it, love it.
I have a great friend. Don't know if you've run into him, Kari Payton.
I love Kari. I love, love, love Kari.
Yes. We went to school together, actually. You know, he's talked to me a lot about, I mean, there's fans that they're always rooting for certain things, or they don't like certain characters, or they don't want certain storylines. But man, with the Walking Dead thing, that, I mean, the fans have it all figured out and mapped out. And well, my understanding is if you veer away, you risk the wrath of the fans, because a lot of them know more than anybody.
Oh, they do. They analyze and reanalyze and slice and dice and examine and flip on every edge and corner. And it's admirable, actually. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. But that's what makes the Walking Dead universe so special, is it invokes that in you. It invokes this like real examination of characters and intentions and consequences, and really forces you to look at all of this. I really admire the commitment of the fans. It's quite something. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. In addition to your work there, you are taking the podcast universe by storm. you're veering very, very heavily into my lane. Just make sure you stay in your own. Not one, but two podcasts, Kicking and Screaming with your husband, Bodie, Not for Children. I love that. Are you having fun with him doing that?
Oh, yeah. I love it. You know, it's we felt like we actually wanted to do a scripted comedy about marriage starring the two of us, because we felt like any show about marriage we had seen was either sort of like multicam light or like Let Me Kill Myself Now single cam about marriage. And we never have seen anything kind of in between where it captures the glory, the torture, the politics, the games, the love, the French, everything.
Right.
And then it just kind of became its own thing. And, you know, every kind of person seems to relate to it. We don't like give advice. We just talk about our own shit in a humorous, very straightforward way.
Yes.
And we also felt like, you know, celebrities or public figures, their relationships always seem managed by publicists and made private, and you never really know.
Right.
And we just thought, oh, for crying out loud, let's just talk about it. Marriage is funny. Like, relationships are funny. And so we just love talking about it. And we are best friends, and we have been through everything.
Yeah. Well, 31 years, that's a long time. So there's definitely not a need for new topics. I have to say, what you were just talking about television shows, it's so true. There either has to be a major problem or everything is just perfect and hunky-dory.
Yeah, and incidental, and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm married myself. There's it's more than all those things, right? Things are complicated. And they can be equally awesome and terrible at the same
time. Totally, 100%.
Yeah.
You're like so glad they're there and you can't wait for them to get out of the house at the same time with equal force and passion.
Also, your friend Heather Dale, All the Things. Now, I have listened to Kicking and Screaming. Tell me about All the Things. I don't know about All the Things.
When we moved to Austin, I met her and we just hit it off, and we always have these fun conversations, and I don't know. We just were like, let's talk about it publicly. Let's talk about all the things that we talk about. And maybe, you know, it's a little like pandemic born of, you know, is there anyone else out there who kind of needs a friend? Well, let's share our friendship with them, because frankly, I was feeling a little lonely. It felt so good to meet her and have the sisterhood, you know,
yeah,
in my neighborhood. And that's really what it is. And we talk from, you know, more serious subjects to light stuff, and we film it and it's on YouTube, or you can listen, but we're kind of cute to look at. So, you know, you can watch it on YouTube, and, you know, it's just fun, frankly. And the longer I've lived my life and the more I've seen in this world, doing things that actually are fun are really important.
Yes. And you are fun. You are fun. And also, you moved to Austin, Texas, and there's a huge part of me that's very jealous of you. I feel like everyone is moving to Austin, Texas.
Austin's rad. Yeah. It really is. It's a great city.
I know.
I never thought I'd live anywhere else. I'm like, I'm so hardcore Angeleno. Like, that's through various factors of the filming, the pandemic, I started homeschooling my kids myself. And it just made sense to live where I was filming instead of all the commuting and stuff.
It's awesome. Congratulations on Austin, by the way.
Thanks.
Jenna, thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate your openness, your thoughts. Again, I'm never going to forget. Everyone is working together to create one moment, and everyone is on the same page. And it's really the only time in the world that happens. And that's a special thing.
Yep.
Thanks so much for talking to me. It was such a pleasure to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah,
and good luck in Austin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jenna, listen, you are the best. And I am not just saying that because we podcasters have to stick together. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it and how much I enjoyed meeting you. And for you listeners, thank you for joining me as well. Make sure to like, follow, subscribe, leave a funny comment on the @offthebeat Instagram, anything to let me know how you're liking the show. In fact, one lucky listener who leaves a comment or review, I'm going to choose your comment or question and I'm going to feature it in an upcoming episode. So stay tuned for that. Thank you all for joining me, and we will see you next week for another episode of, again, my favorite podcast, Off the Beat. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our producers are Diego Tapia, Liz Hayes, Emily Carr, and Hannah Harris. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
A lot of pros to drinking Health 8 kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health 8 Kombucha today.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.